Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, coming your way every Saturday, 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We also stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com, and we archive our programs at richarddugan.com and the radio shows page, where you can hear this and all the other interviews that we've done in regards to Tell Me Your Story. I've been interviewing for over 30 years, and I've had an opportunity to talk with a lot of folks about a lot of different subjects. But this program, providing new paradigms for a new world, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And one of the major keys to life, not just, if I may borrow the phrase, in these United States, but around the world, one of the keys to helping us to do that is the relationships that we establish and create and come into, and in some cases we do go out of them. Some of them are because we change jobs, we change schools, we change neighborhoods, we change total localities, and yes, in fact, sometimes we change relationships just due to, I'm not sure what it's due to. Maybe we'll find out, because we want to find out about how to keep the meaningful relationships in our lives going, and in particular, of course, those with our significant others, our spouses, our husbands, and our wives. We have on the phone, and it's nice to have them as returning guests as far as I'm concerned. I've interviewed them a number of years ago when their first book came out. We're going to talk with them about the secret of great marriages. And my guests are Chuck and Linda Bloom, and I want to welcome both of you to our program. It's great to have you back again. It's been a long time.
Good to be back.
About 4 years, I think, Richard.
Probably about that, yes, because your first book was 101 Things I Wish I Knew When I Got Married.
You got it. That's it.
And that's sort of the precursor, in a manner of speaking, to, of course, the book that we're talking about today and the subject matter, and that happens to be Secrets of Great Marriages, Real Truth from Real Couples About Lasting Love. Now, let's talk a little bit about, are these really secrets, or are these things that people just, they just don't think about enough?
Well, some of them aren't exactly secrets, because some of the findings when we interviewed these extraordinary couples were the things we expected to find. We expected to find that they were a really committed group, that they were a responsible group, and that they made their relationship a high priority. But there were some things that were the surprise findings. So I think that there are some indicators about how to take a marriage that's okay, a good marriage, to great, which really hasn't been written about yet. I think this is a unique piece to find out in their own words. The secrets of success from the gold medalists of marriage.
I have heard it said, and I'm going to kind of put this to you before we go to our first break here, that in some relationships that are probably in the latter stages of, say, the deterioration and separation, that though they would never commit the act, their thought process is, If he would just die, or if she would just die, it would just make things so much easier for me, because this is just, I can't live like this. I don't want to kill them. That's not what it is. But it's like, if they would just disappear, it would just be so much easier for me. Do you find that in those relationships that are kind of heading in that separation, divorce situation?
Well, I think that one of the things that One of the myths that kind of got blown up for us when we were doing these interviews is that even couples who have really got exemplary, outstanding relationships, they have their moments, just like the rest of us do. And they have their feelings, and they have, you know, sometimes they have the kind of thoughts that you just mentioned. We have a tendency, I think, to believe that some relationships are just blessed. And they're a perfect match, and the chemistry is perfect, and everything is, you know, they're just lucky. They just really lucked out. They found their soulmates, and therefore they don't have the kinds of issues or the kinds of difficulties or challenges that us ordinary people do have. And it's actually not true that even the best marriages have their moments.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference that we found isn't so much what kinds of thoughts or feelings people have, but it's, it really has more to do with how they deal with that, how they respond to that, whether they are just possessed by their impulses and they act them out or they scream them out or they do things that they're sorry for, that cause harm emotionally or even physically, or whether they work with their own feelings, their own impulses more, and become better at managing them.
Mm.
So these people are, we were originally going to entitle the book Ordinary People, Extraordinary Relationships, because in many ways these people are ordinary, not in a negative sense, but in the sense that they are just like the rest of us, but they've learned a few things along the way, and they have put into practice the things that really are not secrets, the things that we all know. The difference is that they really embody some of the principles that we know make relationships work.
And we're going to talk more about that as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I hope that you will stay with us as we continue talking with Chuck and Linda Bloom about their book, Secrets of Great struggling through this because I'm also running the board here. It's actually Secrets of Great Marriages, and these are true stories. We're going to find out about these interviews. You interviewed some incredible people with incredible relationships, both of a miraculous sort as well as sort of that ordinary, but had that wonderful quality about it. We'll talk about that as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Don't go away.
Keeping all that fear inside. I understand how trouble haunts you. It haunts me too. Yes, and I do know how you feel. Oh, come on, walk with me. Talk with me.
Tell me your story. New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for staying with us as we continue talking with our guests, the authors of the book Secrets of Great Marriages. They're real truths from real couples about lasting love. I have to say, Chuck and Linda, that what I found so extraordinary before I married the first time about my parents was how they, as you stated very well early on, Chuck, in the program here, that they, it wasn't what they had to deal with, but how they dealt with what was in front of them, those challenges. Six kids, and I even today, I give my mother and as well as my father, and from a man's perspective, my father maybe more so, so much credit. I can't, it's difficult to put into words how much I appreciate what he went through, in a manner of speaking, setting aside a lot of his own personal wants and desires and so forth that he may have wanted for his life, in one sense, to then split himself, in essence, seven or eight different directions with a wife, six children, a job, a house to take care of, and juggling all of that. And he came out, I would say, pretty sane. And he's still pretty normal today. He didn't lose his mind in the process. And then here I am in my second marriage thinking that, gee, I wanted to match their achievement. They've lived over 50 years of marriage together. They're still both alive and well and living and married and happily. And there's part of me that wishes that my first marriage had gone in that direction. I ended up starting over, and I celebrate 10 years of marriage now, and thinking, man, I've got so far to go to match that. I'm going to have to live beyond 100, and so will my wife. But I actually take the pressure off myself by saying, you know what, whether I match it or not, I'm enjoying the relationship that I'm in now and having a great time with my wife and what we're doing here in the Santa Barbara area and this radio program with you. What would you say, not knowing my parents, but having interviewed all of these wonderful people, what was their secret?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the story that you just told, and it's a very beautiful and touching story about your mom and dad, that they've got the earmarks, like the qualities that these couples in our study have, that they were willing to delay gratification, that they had enormous generosity of spirit, that they were willing to give and give and give and give some more to the kids and to each other. They were willing to do without some of the things that people think they must have. And they've got this incredible quality of resilience that no matter what happens, that they've got that bounce back ability. Because we are trying so much in the book to break up the myth about people luck into a wonderful relationship, and you don't just luck into it, you earn it. And all of the couples in our study had gone through some kind of traumatic circumstances. There were people who lost all their life savings. We had four couples in the book lost all their money. One of the couples was even homeless for a while. Couples reported affairs to us. We had people with serious life-threatening illnesses. One of the couples had a child who had a life-threatening illness. And one of the couples in the book, actually one of their kids died. So it wasn't because they led life charming. They had plenty of angst and difficulty and challenge. But they were united together. They stuck by each other. They believed in each other. And they came through it. And I'm a believer in that which doesn't kill me makes me stronger. I think one of the reasons that they value the relationship so much is the level of support that they got from each other during those hard times.
I have to start incorporating a lot of information from other interviews in the context of interviews that I do as I go along. And one of the pieces of information I found so fascinating was some research, scientific research, on the heart. And that not only is it the muscle that pumps the blood through the veins and arteries of our bodies and keeps it circulating and keeps us alive, but that they've also determined that there's an energy force, if you will, that is not just euphemistically or metaphorically speaking the seat of our emotions, but that they're even saying that it is almost quite literally where our emotions reside.
Are you referring to the book, The Heart Math Solution?
No, actually, I'm referring to research that was shared with me by one of my guests, Greg Braden, author of The God Code, and and other such works as well.
Right.
And I found that so fascinating because for so long, you know, we didn't know that much about the heart, and yet we would say all of these things. You know, I say this from the bottom of my heart. How do you do that, you know? Mm-hmm. And yet now we're finding out that it is possible to say certain things from the bottom of one's heart, as it were. And I find that so very interesting how we have come so far that science is now kind of proving some of the things that you're finding out, that couples are... they have that energy. And I wanted to get into not just science, but in terms of chemistry. Tell me about how chemistry, and I don't necessarily mean literal chemistry per se, but we speak of chemistry in relationships, right?
Mm-hmm.
What can you speak to on that aspect of long-lasting relationships?
Chemistry is something that when we use that term, what we're referring to is a combination of tendencies that are complementary that people bring to the relationship through which they both experience themselves as being more fully alive, more fully present, and more whole. And when we find that person that makes us feel that way, we have an experience that is so compelling. We call it falling in love. And it's actually, if you were to really describe what that chemistry, what's actually happening, the truth isn't so much that I'm in love with you, but it's that I'm absolutely in love with the experience that is present within me when you and I are present together. And I do believe, Richard, as you're saying, that this is much more than a metaphor, but this is a literal, physical, physiological truth. There is scientific evidence that the quality and even the quantity of our lives, the number of years that we have, is affected by the quality of love that's present in our lives, in our relationships. So we're not just talking about good feelings. We're talking about life-enhancing forces, life-enhancing energy that absolutely has a physical impact on our existence.
I think that when we talk about two people coming together and making that decision, and I like the distinction that you made, it's like when someone says to one of their friends who is in love with someone else, you know, and there's sort of an obsessive quality of it, not. I mean, they're really enjoying that experience as you've described it, but they say, well, you know, you're just in love with the idea of being in love.
Mm-hmm.
How do you differentiate the two?
Well, if it is truly infatuation stage, if you just wait it out long enough, you'll find out.
Mm-hmm.
Because it always ends. And, you know, some people just get a month or two or a few, but some people get a year or even more. But eventually, the couple has to leave the Garden of Eden. And some people break up the relationship at that point and think, oh, it was just an illusion, it was a fantasy, she's not really who I thought she was, or he's not really who I thought he was. And it's a shame, but a lot of relationships that really have tremendous good raw materials and tremendous potential go by the by at that point because people just love that falling in love and feeling so much. I think that's the good news. When you leave the Garden of Eden, it's a little sad and disappointing, but that's when the real mature love comes about. And so you can know if you're in a relationship long enough, a few years, for instance, whether it was just your imaginings and your illusion, or whether you really are two good people together who can create a great relationship with your commitment and some work to create it.
So the difference, if I'm hearing you correctly, is between that, and I'll use the term euphoric state, the in love with the idea of being in love, and you just, you know, you're walking on clouds, if you will, versus that stepping out of the Garden of Eden and now really living life and just enjoying the living of the life. You may not have that euphoric state anymore, which is okay. And I'm wondering if that is okay. I mean, if I don't have that euphoric first-time love with the person I'm with, oh, it's over. I've got to move on.
Well, think for a moment about, Richard, what it would be like if we lived in that state permanently. If we were just completely possessed by the euphoria of infatuation and obsessed with continuing to recreate that experience, our life would narrow down to a very, very narrow focus. We wouldn't get a lot done. it would be very difficult to live anything close to what we call a normal life, because that is, fortunately, it's a temporary state. It's sort of like nature's way to get our attention and pull us into a relationship or a situation in which there's a high likelihood that we're going to want to procreate and continue to perpetuate the species. So, you know, there's such a thing as too much of a good thing. So it's probably it's probably not a bad thing that the fire and the intensity that is present early on in the infatuation stages cools down somewhat, because it also allows us to see who this person really is and to allow them to see us. Because when we're in it, we are truly blinded to the reality of who we're with. It's mostly just a set of projections that we're putting on the other person. We don't really know exactly who they are yet. And as we spend more time with them, we begin to see them in a more balanced way. They begin to see us in a more balanced way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we leave the garden. That's when the stage of infatuation ends, and then we enter into the state of disillusionment, which means that we begin to see more clearly what we hadn't seen before. We see the nature of our illusions.
Mm-hmm. It is interesting to listen to people on television and different programs, whether they be scripted or otherwise, talk about how the relationship has changed. You're not the same person that you were when I married you or when we first got together, and so on and so forth. We're not doing the things that we used to do, as if that were a bad thing. And yet what you're saying is that actually that is sort of a good thing. And in that, you get to move into new areas, not only to get to know this other person, but you do new things. I mean, there was that euphoric state when I first met my second wife, and that lasted for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But then I kept hearing that, well, you know, we don't do this or that or the other thing as much as we used to. And I said, well, I understand that. And that's because we have all of these other things that we're doing. That, I mean, if you want to do those other things, we have to make the time for them, or just accept the fact that our lives are changing because we're growing, we're wanting to experience other things, and quite literally, there are only so many hours in a day.
There's a finite amount of time and energy that human beings have available, and
yeah.
No matter what we do, we still are left with 24 hours in a day. We're left with needs to take care of our bodies physically. We're left with the need to fulfill certain commitments and responsibilities in order to maintain life on the planet. When we're in that state of infatuation, everything else seems to drift into the background.
Yeah.
And it becomes irrelevant because we are so possessed by these profoundly compelling feelings of love and fulfillment. So it's true. I mean, if your partner says to you, we're not doing the things that we used to do, and, you know, you're not the person that I married 10 years ago. Well, that's literally true. I mean, you are not that person anymore. And that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
And their perception has changed because the nature of the relationship naturally changes. Relationships go through stages, like Linda mentioned. And if we don't appreciate the challenges that are present in each stage, and if we don't come to understand that this is a natural progression, then we might see the stages as being reflective of some problems. And we might see them as something that is reflecting difficulties that we shouldn't have to face. There must be something wrong here because we're not spending as much time together, or my feelings aren't as intense as they used to be.
Right. And I think that's where the problems first start, when you start evaluating the changes in the relationship as if there's something wrong.
Yeah.
When in fact, they're just changes in the relationship. And that's one of the things that we want to talk a little bit about, but I'd like to dive a little bit more into, or actually let's start diving into, these interviews. First of all, how and where did you decide to start collecting the information and the individuals, the couples. What was your screening process?
Well, we knew some of these couples ourselves. We started with some friends that we've known, some of them for years, and we knew that they were very happy together. And then we found that these couples knew other couples, so they would refer us and recommend us to other people. And we both feel like we have a fabulous relationship, so we knew what we were looking for. But it wasn't enough just for the couple themselves to say, we are so happy together. We had to have somebody who knew them be a reference for them and testify, I've known these people for years, and they're the real deal.
Mm.
We were touched by how open these people were with us. You know, we went in at first with a long list of questions, and in the early interviews, two of the couples said to us, do you think maybe we could put the questions aside and we could just, you know, free form? So we quickly left the questions aside because the couples knew exactly where they needed to go to tell us the epiphanies, the breakthroughs, the realizations, you know, when the moments were that they realized that the commitment wasn't strong enough for the relationship to endure and they needed to become commitment, really more committed, when they needed to practice forgiveness because some kind of a disappointment had taken place. And so they were extremely open with us about the trials and tribulations that they had to go through to learn the things that they had learned to be eligible for a great marriage.
Hmm. Well, and by the way, before we go any further here, let it not be lost upon me that you, Linda, were in a bit of distress there a few moments ago. I heard it in the background. And obviously, you are doing well. you're sounding fine now. Mm-hmm. I can't help it. It's just my ear. But that's one of the other things is, I'm curious as to, from these interviews, if the people who are in these committed relationships and they want to stay together, I mean, nobody gets into a relationship with the thought of breaking up. I mean, not unless you're a masochist, I suppose. But as you grow in that relationship, and as we've already discussed, and it changes, did you find that the couple's, shall we call it, intuition about the other, not necessarily always completing the other's sentences, I don't necessarily consider that to be a barometer, but being aware of how the other person is, and those types of things, those caring, compassionate affects, if you will, of a relationship. Do those always seem to manifest in these kinds of relationships, or do they manifest in all relationships?
Well, I'm glad you're asking about it, because one of the significant and outstanding qualities that these people had across the board is they were very sensitive. They were very present, and they were tuned in. They were tuned into themselves. They were tuned into their own feelings. They were tuned into their own needs. They were good communicators, and they were tuned into each other. So I would say that that's one of the primary indicators for success. They didn't always, all of them, have this. Some of the couples talked about how young they were when they first got together and how ignorant and unconscious they were and how many mistakes they made in the beginning. But they were, by and large, a bunch of hungry, lifelong learners. And they paid attention and they learned from the breakdowns and the mistakes to become more sensitive to themselves and the other and to learn those skills, the communication skills. The skills about putting your own needs aside temporarily to be there for the other person. It's one of the reasons it was so inspiring to be around these people. They had really done their work to grow themselves.
Mm. I'm also curious. We know what the stats are regarding divorce, first time, second time, sadly, third time. And again, no one goes into a relationship consciously figuring, hey, you know, this will last for 5 years and then I'll move on to the next person. And that's just the way that it works. We're in a disposable society and ergo, I'm going to have disposable relationships. I'm curious about the percentage of people in these interviews who were interviewed, the couples, who were first-timers versus second-timers versus third, fourth, fifth, et cetera.
Yes, good question. The majority of them were in their first marriage, and there were some who were in their second marriage, and there were two people who were in their third marriage. The average amount of time that these people were married to each other was 30 years. So even people who had been married previously were in this marriage, you know, for an average of 30 years. But there were some who, you know, for whom this was their second and in a couple of cases even third marriage. And one of the things that they said, almost without exception, was that if I knew then what I know now, if I knew in my first marriage what I have come to learn since then, we would not have divorced. And what that told us was that it's not necessarily a mismatch or that there's something irreconcilable about the couple that requires them to separate and divorce. And we're certainly not saying that all marriages are meant to last, because clearly in some cases it's just not a good thing to continue it. But what became really clear to us was that it's more a matter of learning skills, developing skills and cultivating traits and qualities within the individuals that is the biggest factor in terms of longevity and quality of a relationship.
Hmm. If you've just joined us, this is Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and my guests are Chuck and Linda Bloom, and we are talking about their latest book, and they do have two out, Secrets of Lasting Marriages. And we're talking about how to keep the relationships going that you want to keep going. And that's really what it comes down to, in a manner of speaking, that you have to make the choice. And that's always what it's been about. I think that's something that we forget, Chuck and Linda, that sometimes we think that it's fate, you know, or, you know, well, we came together and now we're going apart and it wasn't my choice, you know, I'm just following my path kind of thing. But in Secrets of Great Marriages, you interviewed how many people?
We interviewed over 100 people.
Okay, so we're talking about 50 couples?
Yes, and we narrowed it down in the book so it wouldn't be a big, heavy tome. 27.
That someone could use to throw across the room at someone else. It's a nice light paperback, so it won't hurt anyone. But nonetheless, you also interviewed not only first-timers, you mentioned second-timers, but we also have other types of relationships. And I shouldn't phrase it that way, actually. Relationships are relationships. If someone loves someone else, that's really what's important. If someone cares enough to be with someone else. And you also had, you interviewed same-sex couples as well. Is that not correct?
Yes, mm-hmm. We did.
Yeah, we did.
Because there is so much, I'm going to say, misunderstanding, because they're same-sex relationships, is there really any difference other than the fact that they're same sex?
You know, we found that it's all same. That whether it's a heterosexual couple or whether it's a homosexual couple, they still have the same challenges to handle differences well, to negotiate for their needs, to grow the courage, to be willing to speak honestly about what they feel, this is across the line when we talk to the gay couples and the heterosexual couples. The biggest problem that we found with the gay couples is that the families, not the couple themselves, but the families had a lot of difficulty with it in the beginning, to the point where they weren't even on speaking terms with their own daughter, because it just didn't fit their picture of what they wanted for their child.
Yeah.
But over time, they mellowed and softened and came to love the choice that their daughter had made.
Yeah. I always found it fascinating with my first marriage and divorce that it wasn't until after my first divorce that my family and friends started speaking to me about, well, yeah, we could see things weren't going well. So I'm thinking, well, why didn't you say something then?
Right.
Because
question.
I might have been able to either shorten the time of being in the relationship, or I might have been able to do something with my wife to have fixed it, so I wouldn't be here talking to you now telling me that you saw problems.
Our friends can be a wonderful source of input because we all have blind spots.
Yeah.
And sometimes they can see things that we can't see. And out of concern for us or out of a fear of maybe upsetting the apple cart or, you know, creating a disturbance, they often withhold their input, and which is unfortunate because, you know, not that you'll necessarily automatically do whatever they tell you to do, but that information can be useful. By the same token, our friends can also have the opposite problem, which is to think that they know what you should do and forget that they're only privy to a very limited piece of the picture. And on the basis of that, some friends can be very liberal in terms of providing you their enlightened wisdom, which isn't always so enlightened.
This is true. This is true.
So there's a fine balance there between, you know, speaking to your friend about what it is that you observe as opposed to telling them what you think they need to do.
I'd like to comment about this also because I think this is a really critical issue for a lot of couples. And, you know, our friends hold back from saying some things to us because you can make yourself very unpopular when you give unsolicited advice. And I think that we do well when we solicit some input from our friends about what they're observing. We may have blind spots and may be able to see something much more clearly than we do, but we have to take it all with a grain of salt because it comes through their filters with their history and their preferences and their values, and we have to take that into consideration. But we heard time and time again from these couples that we interviewed how incredibly important their friendship system was to them. Their community of support played a significant role in their feeling of well-being as individuals and as a couple.
Now, normally when I'm doing these interviews, I don't usually run down the long laundry list and resume of my guests. And in this case, I'm not going to do that either. But what I'm going to do is put forth this question to you two, because there's somebody out there who's listening and says, well, you know, this is all great stuff, but who set you guys up as, you know, the gods of relationships? What makes you experts?
Well, that's one of the reasons that we didn't want to pose this book as in terms of what you need to do in order to create the marriage of your dreams. We don't claim to be experts in terms of knowing what couples need to do. What we've done here is we've collected the stories from people whose experiences we have enough understanding of to trust that they do have fulfilling and successful relationships, and we've asked them to share with us what it is that they've learned, what they've experienced, how they've created what they've created. So we're not claiming to have all the answers. We are claiming to have enough expertise to be able to make an accurate assessment about the kind of relationships that we think people find valuable, and then to let them speak for themselves. So I wouldn't classify this as a self-help book. in the sense of it giving the reader the 10 steps towards success.
Mm-hmm.
It's a series of stories in which are embedded a lot of great knowledge and wisdom that these people have experienced in their lives. And some people will find some of the stories to be right on in terms of what their challenges are in their life. And other stories, you know, they may be interesting, but they won't really hit home. But most of the people that we've spoken to have told us that there's, you know, they can really relate to a lot of the experiences that people have, and they are taking from those stories the essential teachings that are relevant to them.
You've obviously had some impact on your the people that you are associating with. Can you share some insights? Do you think it would have as much of an impact if it was coming from a couple that were second, third, fourth timers?
You know, I don't necessarily think that it would make that much difference.
Okay.
I think that in our own marriage, Charlie's and mine, our marriage has gone through a number of incarnations. Do you know, I feel like I've been married about four times, but just to the same person.
Mm-hmm.
That we have evolved and changed so much since we met as kids in our very early 20s, when we were more kids than we were adults. And we've gone through so many different things together. And one of the reasons that I feel that we have this appreciation of what really makes for a great marriage is because we've lived both sides. We've lived in a marriage that was a train wreck because we went really close to the edge of separation and divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were able to pull it out at the last moment.
Mm.
So we've lived in, you know, we've lived in both sides of it. And sometimes people ask us the difference between book number one, The 101 Things I Wish I Knew,
yeah,
and book number two. Book number one is really about a relationship that's in trouble or it's just okay to get it up to good. And then when we took our relationship past good to what we consider to be great for us,
yeah,
then we were eligible to be able to sense that in other people and to see what a great marriage can look like. And all of these stories are so different. It can look a lot of different ways. And I think that's one of the gifts of the book, is that it's whatever two people agree to, it's whatever two people commit themselves to, it's what the two people co-create together that really is tailored just to meet their particular viewpoint in life and their own specific idiosyncratic needs and styles.
Well, the two of you have created not only two great works in the two books, and that is the 101 Things I Wish I Knew basically before I got married, and then, of course, Secrets of Great Marriages. But you've also created Bloomwork, and I want to talk about that. But I want to talk about that when we come back from our break. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And my guests are the authors of those two books, and we are certainly glad that they're with us to share these ideas. Because it is the relationships that we create and that we have and that we work on maintaining that will sustain us through the new ideas and the creative phases in our lives that we are all going through right now to make our world a better world. And boy, you know, if you have better relationships, really, you do. You have a better world. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Why don't you stay right where you are? We'll be right back.
If we leave here today, take to that road, see how far it goes, and on that great ocean road, all the countries in our bones, all the trouble that you know empties out as you go. Oh, walk with me, talk with me, tell me your
New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And Linda and Chuck Bloom are trying to help all of us to do that in our relationships. We all dream of having happy, healthy, fulfilling relationships. And the two of you also have not only the two books that we are also talking about, you also have Bloomwork. Tell me a little bit about that in the last few minutes that we have.
Well, Bloomwork is a compilation of different kinds of services that we offer. We offer counseling for individuals and couples. We offer phone counseling for people who don't live in our area. They consult with us by phone. We even have Skype so we can look at each other.
Ah.
We offer workshops at different places around the country. People can go on our website and see what we're doing and where. We offer a very unusual service that most therapists don't offer, where couples fly in from out of state and spend a day and sometimes 2 days with us doing what we call an intensive. And you can really get a lot of work done in a very short period of time, so couples who are gridlocked about issues can have some breakthrough. And the other thing that we have a mailing list, and every month we send out a newsletter. It's kind of a booster shot. It's got inspirational ideas in it that provoke people to think about how they can enhance their life and make the most of their life. And, you know, they can just go to our website and sign up to get the newsletter. It doesn't cost anything. It's bloomwork.com.
That's bloomwork.com, B-L-O-O-M, as in Mary, W-O-R-K.com, where you can also find out about their two books. The one we're talking about today, Secrets of Great Marriages, and we encourage you to pick up a copy, check it out, check out the information, the workshops. The bottom line is they're here to help and assist and do whatever they can to, you know, help you to keep your relationship on track, if you will. I think that one of the things that happens with a lot of us is we go into relationships and we think it's supposed to go one way, it goes another, and then I think maybe that's why we give up, because we've bought into a certain pattern, a certain blueprint, and now it doesn't look like that, and so it's like, oh, I got to start over. And in a manner of speaking, you can, but you don't have to start over with somebody else.
That's right.
You can start over with the person that you're with.
Exactly.
Now, you said, before we wrap up here, you said that that some people are not necessarily meant to be together. In other words, there are what you consider to be mismatches. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I don't know that it's necessarily because they're fundamentally mismatched, but just because there are certain conditions that are present that just don't seem to be workable for them. And they've you can only really tell that after you've given it your best shot, after both people have really done all that they can do to make the best effort that they can to make this work, which is very different from the attitude that you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of you hit a rough spot on the road and you say, well, you know, I guess we're just not meant to be. Let's just cut our losses and get out of here. But it's really doing all that you can do to understand what your part in the situation might be, what you can do to try to improve things, and to develop the skills and the abilities that it requires in order to negotiate differences and do the things that relationships require. And, you know, of course, this takes some time, but if both people do that, one of two things will definitely happen. The first one is that at some point there will be a shift in the quality of the connection in the relationship, and we have had, there are couples in the book who experienced extreme breakdowns, one, in fact, to the point of divorce, where they actually did divorce, were divorced for 4 years without any intention to get back together again, and did find themselves spending more time with each other and eventually remarried and created a marriage that was far superior to the original one. So that can happen. I'm not encouraging people to get divorced with the hopes that that's going to happen, because it's rare.
Mm-hmm.
But it can happen even in extreme situations like that.
Yeah.
If your efforts don't give rise to a positive change, then at some point one or both people will just recognize that they simply can't continue doing this anymore, because it's literally impossible for them to even find the motivation to continue to work. And at that point, it becomes evident that, we just really can't keep pushing this any longer.
Right, right. Well, and unfortunately, we also can't keep pushing the clock any longer. Our time is just about up here. I want to thank both of you so much for taking the time to share with us your story about the books that you have out, the work that you're doing. Secrets of Great Marriages is the title of their latest work, and we encourage you to check it out. Go to bloomwork.com. And again, thank you both for taking time out and sharing your relationship with all of us through what you do.
Well, thank you, Richard, and thank you for the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
I enjoyed it. Had a good time.
Thank you. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I encourage you to join us every Saturday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time. We also stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com. Check out the shows. Check out our guests. We have links to their websites. I have a link to Chuck and Linda's website, bloomwork.com. And you can listen to this program at the end of this broadcast, and we encourage you to do so. Until next Saturday at this same time, here on Tell Me Your Story, I'm Richard Dugan. Love to Lal. Have a great weekend.